This is Trainer Talk on the Horse Racing Radio Network.
But it was all for Chuck McGee. Super Saver wins the Derby for Top Pletcher.
The Salt will give trainer Steve Asmussen career win number 6,000.
It was all have another for Doug O'Neill.
Oxbow and D-Wayne Lucas. Trainer D-Wayne Lucas, a sixth win.
And Al's Rosie is going to give trainer Gary Contessa his 2,000th career win.
And Dialed In never got to them. It was Animal Kingdom for Graham Motion.
Steve Hobby with career victory number 1,000 at Oaklawn.
Presented by Basic Tipton. Now, here's Mike Penna.
Hello again, everyone, and welcome to the show Trainers Listen To. It is indeed Trainer Talk, presented by Basic Tipton, right here on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Mike Penna, Baron of the Backstretch, coming to you once again from historic Saratoga Racecourse in Saratoga Springs, New York, and extending a very special welcome to everyone joining us throughout North America on Sirius 220, XM Channel 206, and everyone tuning in worldwide with our live streaming on your computer, your smartphone, or your tablet, all there for you at horseracingradio.net. You know, one of the things that I like most about hosting this show and doing this over the past couple of years is that not only do I get to visit with so many of the people that make our sport a success, the trainers in the sport of thoroughbred racing, but you get to hear the vast array of stories, and I get to hear the vast array of stories that in the different ways that people got started and the ways that they arrived to where they are today. And we've heard from Hall of Famers like Bill Mott and future Hall of Famer Steve Asmussen, I think, at least at some point anyways. But you hear from Hall of Famers that have been there, they've done that. Richard Mandela was another great story. But then on the flip side of that, you get to hear from some of the folks that are just getting started with their careers, and that is the case on Trainer Talk here this evening with trainer Abby Adsit. Abigail is the proper name. She likes to go by Abby, I guess, so we'll go with that. And she visits with me now from Saratoga in just her third year of training horses. And how about this? 51 career wins already with more than $1.6 million in purse earnings. And she is with me now on Trainer Talk presented by Fasic Tipton. Abby, welcome to the program.
My pleasure.
Yeah, happy to have you on board and looking forward to hearing your story. I read a piece in Steve Haskins' Blood Horse article that he did on you last year.
Yep.
And he referred to you as the proverbial fairy princess, and he said that your fairy tale has come true. Is that accurate?
Yes, sir. I grew up around horses. My father, Eric Adsit, and my mom, Jean Adsit. I was raised around horses. My dad trained standardbreds, and I was always in the barn and everything, but I had an affinity to ride, and you know, I got my first pony when I was two. And so as I was growing up, and you know, you're with your friends and people will say, well, what do you want to do when you get older, or what do you want to be? And you have little girls saying, well, I want to be Cinderella, or you know, the firefighter, or this or that. And I knew already by like age five, I want to be a trainer. And it wasn't I want to be a jockey, because you'll hear that a lot from young kids. But I knew I wanted to train horses. I loved working with them and being around with them.
Yeah.
And it only grew. And then eventually that yearn from then, or want to be a trainer, then turned into it.
And I know, obviously, we're sitting here at Saratoga, as I mentioned. I know this racetrack is a very special place for you.
Sure is. I mean, I always called this home. And of course, I was on the other side of the tracks at Saratoga Harness. And then I would always come over here to watch the races. And I would, you know, look up to my parents and say, one day I want to do that. And just like a lot of little kids will say that and do, you know, admire it and what's not to love. And I guess I stuck with it ever since then.
Yeah, your mom is sitting behind us right now listening to the program. And I read a story where your mom actually took you right to the racetrack out of the hospital. And your dad has a picture of you in the winner's circle when you're only 4 days old. Is that true?
Yeah.
That's dedication.
Yeah, sure was. I mean, I was always around a track, always around racehorses, very, close to my family. And so it's just in my blood.
Now, you went to school for 4 years, right? Went to college. You graduated from Saratoga High School.
Correct.
Here in Saratoga Springs. Went to Union College?
Yes, sir.
you majored in English. Was there ever a time when you said, hey, maybe I want to do something with my major and do something else? Or was it always just about the horses?
It was always about the horses. I mean, so growing up, it was a good balance between my mom and my dad. My dad was always pulling at me to go out into the barn and to help him and feed horses and get horses to the track and go and race. And, you know, I had that support from my mom, too, but she always instilled academics. And so it was just a big part of my growing up was education and not just doing okay. It was, you know, straight A's and you're going to go to college and this and that. And I wanted to, too. So I ended up, as I traveled with my father to the various tracks and my mom, I would move. So I was in 9 different schools, transferred 14 times by the time I graduated high school. Wow. So that's another thing that happened to me was I was very close to my parents because I was always the new kid. So my parents became my best friends, and I always had my horses. So I was always very confident around horses.
How difficult was that for you? Was it difficult to be a young kid like that, moving all over the country, changing schools all the time? Was that challenging?
It was very challenging, you know, and I think that was what was the, you know, cool thing about going to Union College. I was in one spot for 4 years and I made established relationships socially and as well as getting a good, you know, solid education at the same time. But it also made me more outgoing and learn how to swim with new people. I could say, hi, my name's Abigail Atzett, how are you? Where I wasn't, you know, a shy kid hiding behind something. So I became more assertive. And, you know, you grow up and you go through your you know, early teens and that, and kids can be, you know, cruel sometimes and, oh, the new kid. But I always felt the confidence because I knew at the end of the day when the bell rung, I was going to the barn.
What did the other kids think when you told them that my dad's a horse trainer and I hang out around the barns at the racetrack? What was their reaction? Do you remember?
I mean, it was okay. I've kind of always done my own thing. And so, you know, they admired it. And then as I got older and I got more involved, I was working on the track with my dad at the harness track. And sometimes, you know, at 15, I was running a second string for my dad up in Toronto and racing horses up there from, you know, Woodbine, Mohawk, Flamborough Downs, all the, you know, the tracks up that surrounded the Toronto area. And so I was far beyond my years in that sense.
Yeah.
But and then, you know, everyone kind of understood that was my thing. And then when I went to college and had, they knew me, okay, Abby likes horses. They didn't know the extent. And then they would see. And that was really the only time that when I was, you know, in semester or trimester there, that I wasn't near a horse for a given day, you know?
Was that difficult?
It was. I remember I'd go back to school and I was happy to be there, but I'd have like a tear going down my cheek, like, oh, I can't believe I'm not going to be around horses right now. But I ended up almost getting a full academic scholarship to Union.
Oh, wow.
And so thankful for that. And like I said, it was a beautiful, wonderful experience educationally and, you know, personally.
You can be honest with me. Did you ever have the racing form tucked underneath one of your textbooks in class?
You know what? I didn't. You know, you always kind of hear those stories, and that was kind of more, I relate that more to gambling, people that like to gamble.
Yeah.
I was always in the action of it, but I like to be in the barn working with the horses, you know.
Talking with Abby Adsett here on Trainer Talk, presented by Fasig Tipton on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Now, you mentioned that your interest in racing or in horses wasn't necessarily to be a jockey. It was always to be a trainer and following your dad's footsteps. But you did ride for a little while, right? You rode show jumpers and
So growing up, I got my first pony when I was 2. I was self-sufficient by 5. I could walk, trot, canter. I gave my mom a heart attack when I'd go get my horse out of the field and ride up to the window. You know, I loved, you know, riding horses. That's what really got me into the thoroughbreds. So I eventually then started to play polo, and I was 8 years old, going on, I think, 30 at the time, and I walked into the barn, and there was Ricky Bostwick and Julian Hipwood and Tony DiPaola, these older guys that all play polo here at Saratoga, and I said, hi, my name's Abigail Atzett, I'm looking for a job. And they kind of got a kick out of it, and sure enough, I started riding there their polo ponies, and they took me in as their own, and it was just a phenomenal experience. I ended up becoming the youngest licensed groom. They didn't know how to title me because I needed a license. So, that's where it started. And then I loved, you know, I did the hunter jumpers. I rode at Skidmore College. And then from there, I kind of was like, I had too much racing in my blood. And I loved the harness track, but I loved to ride. So I made the transition and I started galloping horses at the racetrack.
Yeah, and people won't realize when you were the youngest licensed groom in the state of New York, you were only 8 years old at that point.
Yeah.
And then I guess there was a time when you had to kind of, maybe make up a little white lie about your age so you could start kind of getting on horses and galloping a little bit.
Yes, so we made a little white lie so I could get over and get on some horses. And,
I
started
getting. What did mom and dad think of that?
Well, my dad was always okay with that, but we didn't let mom know about that. So
she knows now.
Yeah, right. That's great. So, but of course, I started off at farms, and I was competent on a horse. So anyway, then I came to the track, and just that was it. So I started galloping. I worked for Rick Violet. Was actually my first job here. I had ridden at Thoroughbred Farms up in Toronto prior to that. So I worked for Rick Violet, and it was a great experience. And then I would go to school, and then I would come back, and I worked for Todd Fletcher, and then I would freelance, and I ran a pony business. And the one thing about me was I was never afraid to work, and I never thought, oh, because I'm a rider, I don't, I'm too good to pony horses or do that. I was always confident, never afraid to work.
Hands-on.
Yeah.
I think that's important for a trainer, isn't
it? Absolutely. You can just, you're around your horses, you pick up on things, and you learn their personalities, which are so drastically different from one to another.
Yeah.
So it's, around when you're around them, and like I kind of was saying to you before, when I got out of college, all my girlfriends and stuff, they would try to do weekends together and, Martha's Vineyard or go up to Maine. And they thought that I was blowing them off. And actually, my two best friends from Union, Sarah and Marissa, they came and visited me, and they kind of reported back to everyone, she's not kidding. She works like 15 hours a day and gets up at 4 a.m. And so then, as you asked before, did they understand? And they became to understand.
I think that's the thing about this sport, and it's so unique as opposed to any other professional sport. When you talk to Hall of Fame trainers, I can remember sitting down with Richard Mandela and even Bill Mott and some of the other Hall of Famers that I've had the chance to talk to on the program, and you ask them, what other interests they have, what other things do they like to do when they're not at the racetrack? And they pause for a minute, and they all come back with the same type of answer, maybe in different words, but they all say, this is it. I horse racing, this is what I do.
Eat and breathe it.
You have to, right?
Yeah, you do, because even when you have spare time, you're looking at PPs or looking at extras and looking at entries and, thinking about what stock you do have, and so it's nonstop.
Yeah. You mentioned working with Todd Fletcher and Linda Rice and those type of individuals. So
yeah. I galloped for Todd Fletcher. And then, as I said before, I, did a pony business and I freelanced. And then once I graduated, later on, then I went to work for Linda Rice, and I was galloping horses for her.
So she was really the main internship, so to speak.
Yeah, I just galloped for her, and then they saw my work ethic, and by that point, people knew I knew my way around a horse and would work all day long.
Yeah.
So they said, you need to go down, and her assistants, they said, you need to go down and talk with her and, become an assistant with her. And so I went down, I think I was 20, it was right after I graduated, and so that's intimidating to drive down to Belmont Park. Never been there. I'd only seen races. And so I went down there and I met with her, and that was it. We talked, and she interviewed me, and it was daunting.
Yeah.
It was, scary.
Nervous were you?
I was very, very nervous. And then, a day later, she said, you got the job. And I literally 2 days later then went down there. And
tell me about the first day of work.
Yeah. So it was scary, but at the same time, I felt comfortable in a barn.
Yeah.
So I knew how to direct employees. I knew horses, and, so you feel your way out. But it's like any new job. It's you know, intimidating.
Yeah, Linda's one of the premier trainers that we have in the sport today. I don't know if she necessarily gets the credit that she deserves.
Sure.
But what were some of the things that you picked up on in working with her that you're still using today with your operation?
Well, Linda's the time there, the experience that was given there, and then the relationship I built with her. I mean, I absolutely love her and respect her, you know, to the moon and back. She had, at the time, you know, she built this empire for herself, and she had a lot of horses, and she had different types of owners, and, you know, from low claiming levels to babies to upper claimers to the allowance horses, stake horses. So it was a vast array of both horses and people, and what better way to learn than that? I mean, and it was funny because after about a year of working with her, you know, we became close. She kind of looked at me and she kind of said to me, you know, sorry for being so tough on you. I had to see if you could sink or swim. And I swam, needless to say.
Yeah.
And but it's hard to manage it all.
Yeah.
And it was a phenomenal experience.
I'm going to venture a guess here and assume something. You're never supposed to assume, right? But I'm going to assume that now, looking back on that experience and the fact that she was so tough on you, you're probably very grateful, aren't you?
Oh, absolutely. I'm always kind of a firm believer in tough love, and you learn the most from it. And then when you do well, those rewards are that much greater. So,
do you find yourself taking that same approach now with people that are working with you?
Yeah, you know, I know what it is. It's a fine line between being a professional and being a boss and being a friend. And you got to make sure that those lines are drawn so you can maintain a rhythm, I guess I should say, a rhythm in your barn.
Yeah.
So it's good. And I mean, she taught me, like I said, she taught me things, you know, from dealing with owners to dealing with horses and placement and, you know, the economics behind it. Everyone kind of looks at the sport as just racing horses, but there's so much more than meets the eye. I mean, it's the overall care of the horses. And then it's the, you know, dealing with the employees and the paperwork and the workers' comp. And, you know, you do have to run it like a business. I mean, getting different price, you know, checking out prices from one tack shop to another, or, you know, the various, and, you know, getting the best for, you know, for your horses and for yourself.
Most people see horse trainers and they think, okay, they just go out in the mornings and they gallop their horses and then they come back and they look at their legs and they make sure they're okay. And then they feed them, and then they'll come back in the afternoon and they'll feed them again or whatever it might be. But you're mentioning all these other aspects that are involved with being a horse trainer. How much additional time do you spend on those other parts of running your business?
It's nonstop, so you have to stay on top of it. I mean, when you hire new employees, you have to have the right paperwork and the forms for them and filling it out. And obviously, as I've grown, just like with any business, you hire new employees and people to help you along with the way. But, you know, as the building process and up until that point, I'm still very hands-on in that. So I joke, you know, I say to some of my riders when they hang up their boots and their helmet, and they're done at 10 o'clock, and my day's just begun now, you know. And so it's a lot, but I mean, it's all manageable. And you know, like I mentioned before, as you grow, you get the right people to help you along the way.
Visiting with trainer Abby Adsit on Trainer Talk, presented by Fasic Tipton on the Horse Racing Radio Network. How did you know the time was right to eventually go out on your own?
I guess there's no perfect time. It's just trying to take that leap and being persistent in it. I mean, looking back, I probably should have had a lot more behind me than I did. I ended up getting four people to give me $4,000, and I claimed my first horse for $16,000. I had saved some money, and I had a couple people that were behind me more or less to claim some horses, but it wasn't like I had a huge owner behind me. But I felt confident that I could do it, and I had a friend of mine say to me, you're going to work that hard for somebody, why don't you do it for yourself? And that kind of resonated in my mind for a few months. And then I said, you know what, this is true. I need to be doing this for myself. And so I took the leap.
Yeah, was it scary?
Definitely. Because, you know, that constant income and your check signed there every week, that's sure a great feeling. And now you're running things, and you're making ends meet, and you're collecting money, and then giving it out to the, you know, the vets or the blacksmiths and your employees, and that just grows exponentially as you yourself grow.
We talked about your dad being a harness trainer and how you followed him around the country as a little girl and kind of went to that school where you're visiting every racetrack, you're going to multiple schools. You mentioned 9 different schools. Now, all of a sudden, you're the boss, and your dad is working with you, right?
Yeah,
working
for
you.
Or
described
with me.
Him, described him as your best friend.
Yeah.
Right? What's that like?
It's wonderful. I mean, I was always my dad's right-hand man, or should I say right-hand girl. And then he always did his thing, and he taught me everything. I mean, soundness with horses, nutrition, care for horses. And he was reaching at a point where he pretty much needed and wanted to retire. And I said, I want to make this go. And I'd been down there in Belmont for a while, and I was by myself, and I'm a family person, and I said, you know what, I'm going to grow this barn. I want you to work with me. And it's the same thing. I mean, it was funny, even when I was younger, he always treated me as an equal and always valued my opinion. And it was wonderful, and I learned so much. And then to be able to have that happen, with me toward him, it's a good thing.
Is it a strange dynamic with you kind of calling the shots now and your dad working, as you said, with you?
Yeah.
Is it a strange
no,
dynamic?
No, it's not. There's really no there's no controversy or, no pull or push. We pretty much see things the same. And, he respects my decisions and as I do his. So it really is teamwork. I mean, he's very easygoing, like I said, and as am I, so it's very mutual.
So what's it like having your dad there by your side to celebrate the highs that you've experienced so far?
Yeah, it's good to have him for the highs and the lows. When I get my head down, he said, come on, we've done this for our whole lives, get back up. And to have him there with me through the highs is just, it's so rewarding. I mean, he was such an inspiration, and then to go out there and win, it's for all of us.
Yeah. What are some of the things that you learned from watching him as you were growing up that maybe you're using today, like you do with Linda?
Yeah, just his overall horsemanship. He was just fabulous with soundness and, picking up on things, whether it was horses' weight gain or weight loss, and, working with the actual animal. It's wonderful. And then to be able to have him as my assistant and work with me, who better? I mean, he's got your back, he's loyal, and he's got my best interest, so it's great.
You've always been extremely confident in your abilities, and you can hear that when you talk, and you talk about growing up and everything you went through growing up and being around your dad's operation. How come? Why? What's given you the confidence that you could always succeed at doing what you're doing?
I just think that it's funny when I step back and actually think about it, working around horses and training horses, whether it was standardbreds or thoroughbreds, and then, with the thoroughbreds now, things became second nature to me. And it becomes one of those things where you start to see things that other people wouldn't pick up on. And that's just my second nature. And it's something that you can't really teach somebody. It's just there. What I'm trying to say?
Yeah.
So it's there. So,
Is it like that with horses too? Do some components in that it factor, as I like to call it?
Yeah,
you can
tell? Absolutely. I mean, horses have it or not. And sometimes there's special horses. For me, there's a filly, Flamingo Lane, that's kind of been the filly with the it factor for me. That every time she runs, she shows up and she runs with all of her heart, and she's got it. Whereas I wish my barn had half of her heart. Horses can train good, but sometimes not fire. So it's one of those things. Someone has it or not.
This is almost the 1-year anniversary of Flamingo Lane's victory here at Saratoga, and Flamingo Lane is a great story.
Absolutely.
But that day was very special for you. It was August 31st of last year. Wins the race here at Saratoga, a starter allowance in front of your mom and your dad and your 91-year-old grandmother, who was actually driven from the nursing home to watch Flamingo Lane run. Tell me about that winner's circle celebration.
Well, it was emotional. It was so emotional. I mean, I had limited support at the time. I had 8-9 horses, and at the same time, in the back of my mind, I was just thinking, I just need somebody to give me a chance. I need to get my hands on horses so people can see what I can do with horses. And her winning just put me on the map, and it brought me recognition. And really around that time, I really started to, you know, grow exponentially and get horses, and they could say, wow, she can train a horse and win with it and claim a horse and win with it. So, and then to be able to have my mom, my dad, my grandmother, and my grandfather, who passed away when I was younger, he was always with my father and doing the horses. And I know he was, you know, upstairs looking down on that day, and it was wonderful.
The story of Flamingo Lane mm-hmm. is also very interesting. What makes her so special?
Well, she is a filly that was sent to me. I was at a horse sale, and there was a man that I met, Tom McCrocklin. And, you know, you meet a lot of people, and they'll say a lot of things, and very few actually follow through. And especially when you're getting going, everyone wants to promise you the world, and then you say, okay, let's go. And then it's funny to see the people that actually follow through. So nonetheless, I exchanged numbers with them, and about, I don't know, it was maybe 6 weeks later, I got a phone call. I was feeding my horses from Ocala, and I picked up, and it was Tom. And he said, I have a filly I want to send you. And so it kind of took off from there. I worked with a filly. She had her quirks, and I eventually found what they were and worked with her and kept on and got her to the races. And she ran two dirt races, and, you know, they were cheap maiden 20s. And I said to myself, and everyone was on board, let's give her a shot on the grass before we kind of bail on this horse and send her to a lesser venue to run on the dirt, because she wasn't, you know, she was running third, something like this. And so we ran her one grass race, and she just ran lights out on the grass. And that was the end of the season. So as happy as I was that she ran this big number on the turf, I was also sad, because I said, look, she needs to go to Florida. It's a turf filly. And the owners, you know, Wheelie Yee, that were the original owners, Wheelie Yee, that still currently does, and Wheelie Yee and Tom McCrocklin, they said, you know what, you've done well with her, let's, you know, put her on the inner. So thankfully enough, no one touched her, and I, you know, broke her maiden and non too cheap, and then I got her back to the grass at Belmont, and she just took off for me. She won five races last year. I went to the Claiming Crown with her. Then this year she ran a huge third off the layoff, and then came back and won that race. And then here we are in Saratoga. She had a, you know, ran a great fourth, and then came back the other day and ran third.
Yeah, and to win here at Saratoga, at your home track, so to speak, right, is something that's very special for you. And again, to have the whole family there, that's what the sport is really all about.
Yes.
If you could take that and bottle it and sell it, we'd have a gazillion fans, wouldn't we?
Oh, absolutely. And so much of that is lost on the backside. I mean, in training and in owning. And at the end of the day, I mean, it's been rewarding getting new owners and building my barn, because I'll have grown men hug me and say, thanks for bringing fun back into the game.
Yeah.
Because it is about having a good time. You're going to have ups and downs, but we need to have a good time in the meantime.
We're going to talk about your barn when we come back after this short commercial break. It's a very colorful barn, a very positive atmosphere around the barn of Abby Adsit, and we'll do that next on the second half of Trainer Talk, presented by Fasig Tipton, right here on the Horse Racing Radio Network.
The Fasig Tipton November sale annually posts the highest average and median of any mixed sale in the world. Over the past 10 years, 142 fillies and mares have brought prices over $1 million, and three world records have been broken. Last year, the Fasig Tipton November sale sold 23 seven-figure fillies and mares, more than any other mixed sale in the world, with an average sale price far greater than our nearest competitor. The world's premier breeding stock event, November 1st, 2015 at Fasig Tipton. Where will you be?
And they're off to New York, the premier state bred program in the United States. When you own a New York bred, your horse can run for more than $44 million in purses restricted to registered New York breds. And the New York program pays awards to breeders, owners, and stallion owners when their New York breds finish first, second, or third at New York tracks. We have the quality.
Day at the spa, all the way.
You have the opportunity. New York breds, get with the program. The best program.
And time now to showcase the Kale Density Horse of the Week, which you can find at the upcoming Keeneland September Yearling Sale. And this week's horse is hip number 1919. Write it down, 1919, a gray colt by Candy Ride out of Tapajo by Tappet. A first foal out of this Tappet mare by the number 3 ranked general sire, Candy Ride. consigned by Gainsway for Winchell Thoroughbred's Corinthia Farm, where he was allowed to run free, not stalled, a natural athlete to behold, and fed Cal Density Black Label daily. Veterinarian Dr. Perry Warnell at Harrison Vet Clinic in Cynthiana, Kentucky, is quoted as saying, "I have watched these horses grow up and seen the impressive growth into big, stout horses with strong bones. See for yourself the special qualities Cal Density fed horses offer, like clean radiographs, conformity, bone density, hoofs, and attitude. Visit us at barn number 2 and get the buyer's edge for this special horse. Write it down, hip number 1919, and previous week's hip numbers 346 and 1023 at the Keeneland September Yearling Sale. Write them down."
The Breeders' Cup runs here.
What a memorable Breeders' Cup Classic. It's a race for the ages. Bayern, Toast of New York, California Chrome. Bayern, Toast of New York. Bayern has won it.
The Breeders' Cup, October 30th and 31st. Exclusively here on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Presented by Cal Density. Go to horseracingradio.net for more information and to listen live. This is Trainer Talk on HRRN, presented by Fasig Tipton.
Welcome back to Trainer Talk, presented by Fasig Tipton, right here on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Continuing our visit with trainer Abby Adsit here at Saratoga. And boy, somebody who has really accomplished an awful lot in just 3 years of training horses. And she's not even finished with her third full season. She is in the midst of that right now here at the spa and enjoying this visit. If you missed any portion of the program, you can go back to our website, horseracingradio.net, download the podcast, listen at your leisure, not just to this program, but all of our shows are available for you via podcast at horseracingradio.net and Horse Racing Radio Network on iTunes. Abby, as we completed the first half of the program, we were talking about your barn, and this is something that you take a lot of pride in, and it's a very colorful barn. The color pink is prominent, which is your favorite color, as you told me during the commercial break. But tell me about your barn and why it's set up the way it is.
Yeah, so when I went out on my own, I picked using the colors or shades black and white because I think that then the horse can speak for themselves. It's not gaudy and, you know, it's a clean, you know, clean cut. And then, of course, when you can, I love, you know, big, full pink flowers and ferns. And as we, like you said, we were discussing before, I love to keep my barn immaculate because it's a sense of pride. And, you know, people come by your barn and it's a pride for yourself, for myself, for my horses. You know, I want the best.
It's your storefront.
Yes.
In so many ways, right?
Yes.
Like, we'll hear that a lot with people that own their own business, that
yes.
This is the first thing people see when they walk in our door.
Yes.
We want it to make a
good impression. Sure. I mean, like they, like you say, you know, you can't judge a book by its cover, but oftentimes people do.
Yeah.
And so if, you know, you see my barn and it looks beautiful and clean and my horses look well and they have the best of straw and hay and grain, et cetera, it's good. It makes me feel good.
Do you find that prospective new owners will look at that and they'll say, okay, if she takes this much pride in what her barn looks like, think about how well she's treating my horses?
Yeah, and I want people to feel that because that is the way it is in my barn. Your horses come first and foremost, and at all times I'm looking to do the best thing for everybody involved and the horse, and you know, at first. So anyhow, and where I'm located, I'm in barn 18 right here on the main side, on the main track, and I've had so many people just walk by and stop. Wow, look at your flowers. Your barn looks beautiful. And I've met a lot of people that I had never known before that come by and just talk to me about it.
Wow, that has to mean a lot to you.
It does. It's nice. It's nice to get recognition for things that sometimes most people just look by or bypass, but it does mean a lot.
As we were in the commercial break, we were talking about the fact that Dwayne Lucas is meticulous with the way that his dirt is raked in his barn. And everything when you go by a Dwayne Lucas barn is in perfect order. Much like yours. And you said your dad is a stickler for having the dirt raked a certain way.
Oh, good Lord. He rakes that barn area back and forth maybe 50 times a day. And sometimes I'm like, just put the rake down. We'll get it in a minute. So
a bit of OCD. Maybe.
Yeah, definitely. I would say. or a stress reliever. I don't know what we want to call it, but yes, everything is very meticulous. And, you know, and that's the way I was raised in his barn. I mean, everything was absolutely immaculate in and outside the barn, from fresh laundry for the horses and towels and saddle towels and all of it. Yes, all, you know, pine saw the webbings and clean and cobweb, and you know, it's and you know, and it's the way it should be. You should have a clean barn.
Yeah. Well, I mentioned the success you've had in just your third season here, and it started off, I think you won, what, 5 races a couple of years ago in your first year of training, then last year it was 20 some odd, and now you're already eclipsing that mark midway through 2015. So things are trending upward, but you're competing on a circuit that is extremely difficult. I mean, Todd Pletcher, Chad Brown, Bill Mott. I mean, these are the names that race here regularly, and yet you're having a lot of success even against those bigger barns. Tell me a little bit about that.
Well, when I first went on my own, I knew I wanted to stay in New York, A, because if I wanted to do something, I wanted to do it big. I wanted to do it right, and New York's a prominent circuit. It's the best, really, and I wanted to be here and stay here and grow. And I had an opportunity that someone said, you know, I'll give you horses if you go to this track. And I said, you know what, I'm going to stay right where I am in New York. And but it wasn't easy. It was tough. It was tough for those first year and a half. I mean, I was galloping my own horses, grooming my own horses. I was freelancing for other trainers so I could make money to make sure that I could have the staff that I needed for my horses. And you know, it's not easy, and it's a lot labor intensified. And but I knew if I wanted to become one of the best, I needed to stay here and play amongst the best.
Yeah. Yeah. So what is the key to being successful with a smaller operation like yours when you're going up against some of the operations that have far more horses?
It's just staying in tune with yourself and your horses and staying self-reflective. As soon as, you know, I've explained to some people that have said, well, you know, when I had five horses or something, and now I have 30 horses, and I kind of looked at them and I said, well, they didn't just walk themselves in here. I remember when I was, you know, I had 5 horses and I was doing all the work myself, and, you know, I had cheaper horses at the time because then, you know, I needed to run out of town and get a win and get the horse claimed and then reinvest that money and then get better horses in New York and then run here and win. And, oh, she can train and she can win, because I had a, you know, a limited opportunity, so I had to make the most of what I had.
Right.
And that's still how I approach every horse. I try to make the most of each horse, whether at whatever level it is. And it's difficult, and you got to keep going. But like I said, you have to stay in tune with yourself and your horses, and you can't have an ego. Just because I needed to ship a horse over to a lesser venue, that's okay. Let's get a win, and then I'll get that money back invested back in New York and get a better horse.
Yeah.
And never compare myself. And as I was saying, I was talking to one of my friends, and I said, do you think that I wanted to get up and gallop 7 horses and freezing weather and dew stalls and water buckets and this and that at the time? But, you know, not necessarily. I mean, obviously, yeah, I loved it, but I was thinking, you know, it would be nice to have staff, a full staff, et cetera. But I mean, I was growing at the time, and I never could compare myself. You know, you would think, oh, well, look at, you know, Todd Pletcher has the best horses in the country. You know, that's not fair. Well, yeah, it is. He earned that. He got that. And I felt the same way. I was going to earn what I could get, and I didn't want any handouts. All I wanted was a chance.
Yeah. How about being a female trainer? And I even hate that term because I just refer to trainers as trainers, right?
Thank you.
You're a horse trainer.
Yeah.
But being a female in a male-dominated profession, have there been some challenges there?
You know, I never really picked up on it. I was always kind of raised as a tomboy and operated, you know, and never really brought up the gender thing. And then it's funny, as I've gotten bigger, sometimes you kind of could get some condescending comments that were gender bias, and you know, I've rolled with the punches. And the bottom line is just surround yourself with good people and consider the source. So
tell me about some of the people that are working with you.
Yeah, so I have my dad as my main man there, and he works for me and, you know, works right with me and helps me claim, etc. I have another assistant at Belmont Park, Scott Acker, and he helps me run a string there and helps me with my out-of-town horses. And, you know, then I have a staff of grooms and hot walkers, and I have a rider Kelvin Perez. He used to work for me at Linda's as a hot walker, and then when I went on my own, he came out with me, and then he wanted me to teach him how to ride. So I had a pony, Tucker, that actually Donna Brothers rides, and to be the ESPN or NBC pony.
Oh, really?
And
that's your pony?
Yeah, the chestnut Tucker is my pony. And so anyhow, with all the time I had, not really, I took Kevin out to the pony track and I started teaching him how to ride a horse, and he was a natural, and eventually he went to jock school and then came back, and now he's riding for me. He's a wonderful rider, and I have another experienced rider, Crossdale, that's in Belmont. So yeah.
I got the question from somebody the other day that was asking me, how do trainers do it? It was, matter of fact, my uncle, and he said, how do trainers do it where they have barns at different racetracks mm-hmm. around the country? You mentioned your operation down at Belmont. You mm-hmm. have a string there. You have a string up here at Saratoga mm-hmm. with you. How do you do it? What's the key to keeping all that straight?
Just going over lists and constant contact. And then I was driving down after I'd run in my races on Monday. I'd drive down to Belmont and be there on Tuesday and go and see and be around your horses. And of course, you know, because there's limited stall availability in Saratoga, so you can use the shuttle or your van drivers, whatever means of transportation, and, you know, keep your horses revolving.
Yeah.
And it's all about pattern and routine.
How often do you like to physically put your hands on each horse that you, I mean, obviously you could do it every day, it'd be
yes.
great, but with multiple strings, how often do you like to try to see them?
Well, the string that I'm around, I look at them every day.
Yeah.
And then when I go back to Belmont, I'll only have all my horses will be there. So it's just right now because of the limited stall availability, because, yep. you know, Naira, they're catering to so many trainers here. So I have to keep a string down there. So that said, that's making sure that you have a staff that you can trust and, you know, implement your ways and you know, credit the people down there. They know what I see, what I want, how I like things done.
Yeah, obviously your operation, Abby, is growing leaps and bounds. And as I mentioned earlier, the arrow is definitely trending upward. Talk about some of the people that have been by your side and supported you in these first 3 years.
Yeah, you know, it's been wonderful. Obviously, my parents have been there through everything with me and given me support. And when things get tough, it's nice to have their support behind you. And then, of course, Linda Rice, you know, I absolutely love her. She's been very supportive and taught me so much. And then going out, as I went out on my own, I've had people, as far as owners are concerned. I had Amanda Lederer was part of my first horse that I ever claimed. She's wonderful, her and her husband Mike. And then as I started growing, Callenberg Farms was a huge, huge support behind me. Actually, I trained my first winner for him. And then I went to the baby sales with his money. And then as it grew, I mean, now I have fabulous people I train for. Matthew Scherer, tremendous man, trained for Blue Stork, Rick Franco, and then Drawing Away, of course, then Aaron Ugoda. These people have all been, you know, behind me. And it's about having a good foundation with owners that are realistic and that also, you know, they're in it for the long haul, and they want to do right by their horses and by you.
Yeah. When you think about where you started, everything you've gone through earlier in your life, and now getting to where you are today and seeing everything come to fruition, what goes through your mind?
Just about winning more races and getting bigger. I never really stop and pause, and I've had people tell me, like, look at what you've created. And
but there's a lot more to come.
Yeah, that's what I hope and I want. I want to be able to build my barn and have good stock and compete at all levels, from claiming horses to allowance to stake horses. So when I actually stop and think about it, I mean, I'm so blessed and thank God for everything and the people around me. But it's great. And like you said, hopefully I want more to come.
Yeah, looking ahead up the road, do trainers set goals for themselves? And if so, do you have goals for yourself?
Like I said, I really try not to judge other people. If it comes by hearsay, I just respect everyone for what they do and just try to focus on me. But goals for myself would be to get some more allowance horses and some stake horses, some young stock in my barn.
Right. Do you go to the sales and take a look?
I do. I do go to the sales. I actually bought a horse for It's all about the girls with Anna Seitz. I just bought a horse here at the Fazig sale, a filly, a Desert Party filly.
Yeah.
And then prior, I've dabbled in buying some horses.
Anna's great. She's been a huge friend of mine and a big fan of the show for a long time.
Yes.
And I love her to death. And she has really done a lot to help horse racing through what she's put together with her female syndicate, so to speak.
Absolutely. I mean, she's wonderful. I met her in 2013 at a sale. And ever since then, it's just we've clicked. We've gotten each other. She's hilarious. We have a great time. And it's another one, like you had said, there's a positive aura in your barn. She's another person. She has a positive aura in what she does, whether it's from her racing syndicate or to her work at Fazig. You know, she's a good name and face, and she truly cares, and she likes to have fun doing it.
Every trainer will tell me, Abby, that in order for them to get to where they are, they've had to go through the highs and they've had to go through the lows. And this is a sport, we say it all the time, it has the highest highs, the lowest lows. We mentioned the huge win that you had last year out here when your entire family was here, but you also went through a pretty significant low here last year as well.
Mm-hmm.
With a horse by the name of Lavender Road.
Mm-hmm.
Tell me that story and tell me how you overcame that and how you get past something like that.
Yeah, so I mean, at the time I'd only had 8 horses, and this is a filly that I'd bought at a training 2-year-old and training sale, and I gave $90,000 for it. It was for Kallenberg Farms. Again, you know, great people, and of course I don't want to call the owner with bad news, and they've stood by me and helped get me started, and so anyhow, the filly was scratched behind the gates because she was tying up, and she got brought back to the paddock and was walking out, and unfortunately she started a heat stroke, which a lot of times horses come out of, but it's very violent, and as when she flipped over, she hit her head and she broke a vertebrae up there, and that's why she was unable to ever, you know, get back up. And I had to compose myself in front of thousands of people. I wanted to stand out there and cry like a little baby because it hurt. And, you know, I mean, those horses become family. I'm around those horses more than I am my own family. And it's a ton of pain. So you hold yourself together, you deal with that hand. And I remember just driving home, and I just locked, you know, just went in my room, and I just dealt with it, you know. And obviously, you got to keep going, but it was very tough, you know.
How do you keep going? What keeps you positive, and how do you show up at the barn the next day and just keep going? How do you do it?
Probably persistence, you know, having that sense, and stubborn, and want to just keep moving forward and just try to see the positive in everything, because, okay, that was a great loss, but around the corner there will be a great gain.
Talking with trainer Abby Adsit here on Trainer Talk, presented by Fazig Tipton. As you can hear in her voice, she has a passion for this sport like so many of the top trainers do, and she is just getting started with this very young career. Did you have other trainers that you idolized when you were young and growing up?
Yeah, and even still now, I mean, obviously, I love Linda, and I think she does a fabulous job. I'd have to say I really have a respect for Christophe Clement. I think he runs a beautiful barn. I think he's a great horseman. I think he handles his horses well. And, I'd have to say I really admire him. And then, of course, Todd Pletcher, what's not to love about that, too? He runs a first-class operation.
And now to be here competing with them and sometimes beating them in
Yeah.
some of these races, what's that like?
It's rewarding. Again, it's kind of one of those things when I look at the program, you see them in there, but when I'm running the race, I'm just focused on myself and my horse. I'm not really paying attention to any of the names. And then after the fact, I'm like, wow, that was pretty awesome.
That was my idol.
Yeah.
We have another show that people are familiar with on Tuesday nights called Jock Talk.
Uh-huh.
And a couple of weeks ago, I had the chance to sit down with Irod and Jose Ortiz.
Yes.
And talk to them together. And they talked about growing up idolizing John Velasquez and Angel Cordero.
Sure.
And then when they came here and they started riding, and now they're in the starting gate with their idol, John Velasquez.
Yep.
It was a huge thrill.
Sure.
And here they are now trying to beat him day in and day out.
Mm-hmm.
and Irod on top in the jock standings here.
Sure.
So mission accomplished for him, but it was very special for them to be in the same setting.
Absolutely. It is. I mean, it's crazy. I mean, like, my barn's next to Rick Violet's right now, and just to think, I mean, that's where my first job was, and now I have a barn full of horses next to him. And, you know, it's definitely, I have an admiration for everyone that's involved on the racetrack, because it's, you know, it's hard, and it's, you know, labor intensive. And so it is very rewarding. And sometimes you kind of have to say to yourself, wow, you know, this is awesome, you know.
If you were going to sum up your training philosophy mm-hmm. and your approach to training horses? How would you do it?
It is just, it's all about the horse. You have to stay in tune with your horse and yourself, and you can't get led astray. And, you know, you can't have an ego in this game. And you have to put horses where they belong, and you have to do what's right for the horses and for your owners and for yourself.
We've talked about some of the top horses that you've been around and some of the horses that really captured your heart. You said that they're all like your children. So mm-hmm. tell me about a couple of horses we haven't talked about yet that, for whatever reason, you're just never going to forget.
Right. Well, so my first winner, that would be one, is Giant Indian. And I claimed him, and I ran him back in a starter allowance and ran fourth, but he ran well. And then I ran him back, and I won. It was my first win. And I remember going home, and I had tears in my eyes, like, I finally did it, you know. And it was funny because I'd saddled tons of horses for Linda, for other people, and now I was saddling for myself, and all of a sudden I found myself nervous. And it was weird how your body responds to it all. I'm like, why am I nervous? I've saddled thousands of horses, and all of a sudden you find it doing for yourself, and it's a wonderful thing. And then having that first win with Giant Indian was just, it was unbelievable.
Yeah, I can imagine it had to be a very special moment for you, and sure. really the start of something very special here. And you look at now where you've come since that first winter, and it's pretty remarkable, and you're to be commended for that, because I know you put the hard work in, and you said you were never afraid to work, and that's true. You know, one thing that catches me as I'm talking with you, you hear the enthusiasm in your voice, right? But you are part of a younger generation of mm-hmm. horse trainers, and you never ask a lady her age, so we're not going to get into that, but you're part of a younger generation. You're on social media, right?
Yes.
Is that important nowadays with the new social media trend and everything that's happening on social media, to be on social media as a young trainer to help build your business?
I think so, definitely, because I think the more people see and you have results or have good things happen, it's good for other people to see that. And then hopefully, you know, one thing will lead to the next. I remember when I lived in my basement apartment and had my six horses, and something good would happen, and I would try to call five people and see, you know, if something else good could happen, you know. And it's just about contacts and communication.
Yeah. Do you end up picking up more clients through social media?
Yeah,
or is that just something you do to keep the word out there?
I try to keep the word out there, and if it happens, it happens. And, I mean, it definitely brought me some notoriety for sure. And to be able to be on a show like this, or to be able to have my, you know, my Facebook or my Twitter.
Yeah, you've hit the big time now.
People, yeah, so, right? Thank you. Thank you.
It doesn't get any higher than this, by the way.
Exactly. So it's been, you know, it's been fun. And, I mean, it's keeping up with it. And, you know, word spreads. And I definitely think that it's a big factor.
And people can follow you on Twitter, right? It's
yes.
at Abigail
at it, yes.
right?
Yes.
And spell that for a minute, because people will be like, Abigail.
It's A-B-I-G-A-I-L-A-D-S-I-T.
All right. We encourage them to do that. Do you have a website?
Actually, it's going to be put back up. I took it down for a little bit and wanted to make some changes, but it's AbigailAtsitRacing.com.
Yeah. Well, another great way to keep in touch with Abby and let her know that you heard her here on the program, of course, and really enjoyed the course of this hour. We have a few minutes left, and I always like to, kind of as we're winding down, ask trainers or what single thing that they are most proud of in their careers, and you get so many different answers. How about you? What are you most proud of so far?
I guess what am I most proud of? You know, I think back to a time when I first started to get a bunch of horses, and it came back from Aqueduct, and I sat down in my barn, and I looked to my left, and I saw all my hay bags and my heads poking out. I looked to my right, and I saw the hay bags and all my horses' heads poking out, and it was just such a sense of accomplishment. I was really proud that I'd gotten all these horses and, you know, was winning races, and that was like a wonderful moment.
If you could rewind the clock, anything that you would do differently with this journey?
Nope, because every step of the way has made me who I am. So sometimes you wish you could change things or not, and it's just everything that brings you to a certain point in life, I think, happens for a reason.
All right, so if you're not at the racetrack, which I know is basically never, because you're always at the racetrack, but
right.
What other things, what other interests do you have?
That's really that's bad. I read the daily racing form religiously. I fall asleep watching race replays. Yeah. Horses are my life.
Well, you know what's funny? That's the same answer I get from all the greats. I mentioned all the Hall of Famers, the very same answer that I get from all of them as well. Abby, really appreciate the
wonderful
time.
Wonderful. Great
and,
to meet you.
All the best moving forward, and congratulations.
Thank you.
Trainer Abby Adsit here on Trainer Talk, presented by Fasic Tipton. What a fun hour to hear the enthusiasm in her voice and to hear how she talks about so many of her horses, refers to all of her horses as her children, and to be working with her dad and going down this road with her entire family, it really is special, and really enjoyed that visit. I hope that you did as well. Don't forget, if you missed any portion of Trainer Talk presented by Fasic Tipton, you can go back to our website, horseracingradio.net. A podcast will be available that you can listen to at your leisure. You can also go to Horse Racing Radio Network on iTunes and make sure you get those podcasts every time we post them. They will go right to your phone or however you want to set that up. So make sure you do it all through horseracingradio.net. And Abby, like all of our guests who appear on the program, is going to receive a gift courtesy of Flair Equine Nasal Strips. We'll get those out to Abby and make sure that she puts those to good use on all of her children, so to speak, all of her horses. But, wow, you think back on what she's been through and where she started, and this is all she ever wanted to do, and she's done it extremely well. This is her life. And you have to be like that. And I mentioned to her at the top of the show that when you ask trainers what else they like to do outside of horse racing, the great ones are going to tell you that this is it. This is all we've ever wanted to do. This is even on the dark days, it's still about horses for them. It's still about horse racing. There are no breaks. And that's what makes training horses such a unique profession. Well, an awful lot of fun here with Abby tonight, and don't forget to join us every single Wednesday night for Trainer Talk presented by Fasic Tipton. Of course, Tuesday nights is Jock Talk presented by Tito's. Thursday nights, our BristNet.com call-in show, and on Fridays, the Express Bet Weekend Stakes Preview, and of course, every Saturday, our Equine Forum show, which you can catch 8 to 10 a.m. Eastern. You can go to our website, horseracingradio.net, for a complete listing of shows and all those podcasts. They're all there for you, horseracingradio.net. For my producer back in Lexington, Lee Delapina, for my beautiful wife, Michelle, on site here in Saratoga, pushing all the right buttons, I'm Mike Penna. We'll talk to you next time on Trainer Talk, presented by Fasic Tipton.